days can you then investigate and report that to me? So this is a new board that's dealing with issues that happened when there was an old board. So it's not like a new board is investigating itself. So Minister then wrote to the new board to say, these are matters that came to my attention. Can you then investigate and report back to me? Hence the report that was submitted by the board to the minister. And that report was also shared with was sent to Ajam Kingi. That's the report.
It was even said in one of the meetings that there was no board at the time. It's the CEO that is acting as the accounting authority. Wasn't there something like that?
There was a time when there was no board appointed, but the issue of the honorable chair of the salary increase was handled by the previous board, because the gap between the old board and the new board, I think it was just a period of 6 months or so. Yeah. It wasn't such a long period. So, but the issue of the bonus and whatever was handled by the old board.
Just a comment. The department advising the minister is excellent. You cannot investigate yourself. Mm-hmm. Period. The previous board could have been the members in the new board could have been members of the old board. So, as a general rule, the DG, this one, cannot investigate the previous DG. You have the regular. In terms of ethics of just can't remember the name, but you cannot, the previous minister cannot, and this minister cannot investigate the previous minister. It has to be an external independent body that can do that, but not that very body. You can't. But it's way, fine, but it was, you would have been advised that it was best on the record.
The salaries and the breakdown was also provided to the secretariat of the committee that outlined the increments over a period. And the issue of the bonus, Honorable Makondo, yes, the CEO received the bonus and the salary increments. I think it's how we articulated our statement, because we should have said the CEO did receive the increment, but it was not 80%. I think that's what we need to clarify to the members of the portfolio committee. Yeah, I think those are the issues that I wanted to just touch on. I don't know whether Dr. Kito has something to add to the report.
I think around the salary increase, I think what was alleged was that the CEO received an 18% increase in salary. That was an allegation that was made, even in the meeting that we had at the NEC. And then the investigation that then followed, and I think also we're not disputing the fact that there was a salary increase across the board. If you recall, documents were presented that indicated that salary increase was increased by ward to the tune of around, I think, 7% across the board. And it actually wasn't, there wasn't a case where it was a sliding scale. I think that was another issue that was raised, to say why it was not a sliding scale as in the case in public service, because if you recall in 1516, if I'm not mistaken, of last year, 16-17, yeah. Middle management from level 12 or level 1 up, they receive a certain percentage, I think it was around 7% or so. And then you come to level 13, they will receive a certain percentage, chief directors level 14, it was 2.5 and so forth. So there was a sliding scale. So the issue was around to say that why then in NEC that was not applied. But I think we're not disputing the fact that there was an increase in salaries across the board, and it was 7% across the board. But what was being disputed was the allegation that said that there was a once-off 18% increase in the salary of the CEO, and we indicated even in the annual report that it was a misprint which was reported to the AG, and as such had to be corrected. So I think that's around then the salaries.
The time when as a portfolio committee we were asking ourselves, is there a department of arts and culture? I did ask the DBG, really, is there a department here? Because the manner in which things are done in the department, I don't know what entities would learn from the department as a matter. I don't know what the department of arts and culture. Really teaching the entity. Because if this is how you do things, how are you going to expect entities to do better than you are doing? I think you need, we're so tired, we're sounding like a broken record now. You know, saying the same thing over and over again. And it's not good, not for you, not for us, not for anybody. We are sounding like a broken record, because in every meeting we say the same thing, yet you go away and come back with the same problems, with the same mistakes. I don't know whether you're not prepared to learn from your mistakes, because if you're not prepared to learn from your mistakes, then it means you never progress. Let this document need to go back and give us the information that was required from me by the questions that were raised by members here. Chairperson, over to you.
Culture, but every time when the NAC Council comes in contact with the portfolio committee, something like that. But I suppose we'll be able to quell that fire today as we go ahead, and most probably we'll be very happy at the end in terms of what we left us with, we'll be able to deal with it to a greater extent. I wish I could be able to start with issues that have been raised that are critical importance, but I suppose I'll end up with it in terms of those implications and issues that we raised, and those thorny issues that leaves not a tasty environment, really. Now, if we just start with the annual report, Chairperson indicated that we should try as much as possible to be short, but a lot of things that we indicate will just browse through and let that and I suppose we don't have all 19 on our presentation too. If there is, then we should give a disclaimer in advance. I hope so that we do not have that. If we page through to the issue at hand, I will not take you through the table of contents and things like that to the page. It should be. I suppose that we're going to have 19 and 19 and all other issues. It should be remembered that the pre
previous council of NSE was dissolved on 31 August 2016, and a new council was appointed in January 2017. And as already been indicated, the previous chairperson also resigned, and I took over in March 2017. So council could really start to begin to work at the end of the first quarter in March 2017. And most of the things, the advisory panels were also getting reconstituted during the fourth quarter due to delayed establishment of council. And therefore, we've also not been able to make any disbursements because we're awaiting council's approval. One of the submissions that was made in terms of partnership proposal was sent through to the Department of Finding and Community Art Centers, which is still outstanding. In terms of the NSE mandate, in terms of that particular page, you'll be able to see yellow, green indicates extensive compliance, yellow indicates partial compliance, and red indicates very limited compliance. And in terms of that presentation, you realize that in 2014-2015, there was a number of red blocks that indicate limited compliance, and in 2015, red disappeared, leading through to 2016-2017. Hence, you will recall in the previous presentation in terms of our compliance, in terms of our analysis sitting at about 80%. And that shows a progress in terms of implementation of the objectives that we are considering together with the minister. In terms of linkages to the DT strategy and the broader economy, I will not even go much in terms of these ones. I think this is quite self-explanatory. I don't want to take much time, but unless members want to be able to talk much about the details that we have. And it also been reported in the media audit that we are on the third year of the clean audit. And really that has, you know, it's much to say about it in terms of how much we really try our utmost to make sure that we comply with everything that we do. We would not be able to achieve a 3-year clean audit, but fail for this much in terms of governance. And it's a misnomer, something is wrong. Because one would wonder in terms of how are we able to achieve such a clean audit, and how bad we do in terms of governance. And those things need to be clarified as we go through. In terms of budget allocation, in terms of the NAC Act, the budget allocation is 75% for grants and 25% for administration. And as per the renewed approval by the Minister of Arts and Culture, for the current financial year, we're seeing a 70-30 allocation as opposed to the 75-25 in the previous years. And that will receive an approval from the Minister. This will indicate where the grants go to in terms of what disciplines that we have, the craft, the dance, literature, visual arts, and many others, in terms of where we're spending the money. We're spending the money in terms of the funding model, and our funding model is looking at 50%, 30%, and 20%. 50% will be for emerging artist organizations, and that is right at the beginning in terms of development. 30% and 20% is in that particular funding model, necessarily to ensure that those organizations or artists that are already well established, they should not necessarily have equal access to those that are just emerging. The emerging ones need much more attention compared to the already established and sustained ones. The asset administration program goals, this is also quite self-explanatory. The more important thing that I would like to take you through in terms of the 2016-2017 funding is where we how we answered the goals that we have. In terms of the funding priorities, indigenous art forms answered for goal 2, we overachieved by 9%. And in terms of the provincial split, we also exceeded the target by 0.2%. In terms of the funding priorities, gender literacy, we also exceeded this target by 9.9%. And I want to believe that a more substantive report will be presented, because this was not meant to really give funding subsidies for youth also exceeded the target by 11.78%. And funding subsidies for people with disabilities also exceeded the target by 0.25%. Now, in terms of capacity building, we also exceeded the target by 12.02%. And funding priorities for marketing, the brand campaign strategy is being updated and implemented, and we're in the process of rolling it out. Now, the human resource IT and financial administration, has already been stated, we've got an unqualified audit outcome, and then we're going to do what is achieved. Now, we will go deeper in terms of detail, in terms of what are the objectives, what are the plans. Already, we've already painted the picture in terms of where we're not doing well in terms of the 20%, which is partially achieved, but we don't want to go into that particular structure right now in terms of giving much more detail, because suffice to say is that that's what we did. And in terms of NAC staff and support structures, council members are 20, others are 22, staff is 37, plus 7 central staff. Now you'll see that the number of council members and panels almost exceeds the number of staff members. And quite a huge number in terms of the total number of employees as opposed to council and panels. Now in terms of financial performance, it was an extremely challenging both inside and outside the organization, but we remain financially sustainable. And it was quite a difficult year, but we obviously had to pull through in terms of the challenges that we had. And we've already stated in terms of how we performed in terms of the financial aspect. And the NAC income for 2017, it's quite clear, I think, unless there are any questions that one wants to zoom in terms of that particular aspect, and also in terms of the NAC expenses for 2017. So, Chairperson, I'm really trying to be as brief as you requested. Those are challenges that started meeting the demands, and then that will indicate amount requested in 2016 and amount allocated in 2016, and amount requested in 2016 for funding and things like that. But for, at the end of the day, quite important in terms of that we were able to manage within the targets that we have set, and we have achieved 50% of those. The highlights in the year, the support of the Minister of Transport and Land for Southern Africa, 28 artists were taken to Canada to participate in the Bobby Island International Diaspora Festival. We also participated in the Architects World Congress. We had a collaboration with BRICS countries, China. We also have a strategic partnership for Africa Meets Africa. And also in partnership with the Mpumalanga province, know it and we can account to it and they can give substantive answers to it. The issue that was presented to the portfolio committee were a number of issues around the issue of salaries. One was that the CEO and the CFO have received a substantial increase above 18%. In particular, it was also indicated that the CFO salary has doubled over a year. And the investigation was prompted or was escalated the instruction of the minister. The minister wrote and then gave an instruction to the board of MSCs to have a look in terms of this salary increase as to whether it is correct and to confirm or deny what the salary increase is as stipulated. And it was included in two reports. The first report was the one of a letter that indicated that the CFO salary was almost doubled over 1 year. The second report was in the Freddie Nutella's allegation that the CFO has received an increase over 18%. What we have found out was that one, the salary increases of NAC are regulated in terms of the DBSA framework. The DBSA framework issues circulars on each year in terms of what salary increase is supposed to be applied to a certain occupational level. Now, in this particular instance, DBSA issues circular 1. The circular 1 is applicable to level 1 to 12 occupational levels. And circular 2 applies to occupational level 13 to 16. Now, in the year 2014 to 2015, in terms of the board of NAC took a decision that they cannot apply the DBSA framework and deviated from a culture that was established for more than 15 years, and then recommended that the salary increase to be applied for that particular year in question to be below what the DBSA framework indicated. That raised an uproar from employees and the trade unions, and the board had to go back and review its own decision, and then in return, a round-robin scenario took place, in which round-robin scenario, the board was not indicated, was not advised of the two circulars applicable. And the board made a decision that the DBSA framework in that particular year, 2014-2015, should also apply. Now that therefore meant that there was lack of clarity in terms of how that was supposed to apply. And this is what happened. When the board said the DBSA framework must be applied across the board, they then applied the percentage applicable, or as per DBSA circular number 1, that is applicable to level 1 to 12, and they applied that across the board, which therefore meant if the DBSA circular indicated that level 1 to 12 were entitled to a 7% salary increase in that financial year, therefore that means also level 13 and 16 also received 7%, which therefore was contrary to what was indicated in a circular that was applicable to level 13 and 16, which then said 5.5% or 6%, which therefore meant that in that financial year, 14 to 15, the level 13 to 16, which includes the position of the CFO, ADO, which is the Arts Development Manager, and the CEO, received an extra salary increase of 1.5%. In the next financial year, they followed the very same board decision and applied the DBSA circular that is applicable between level 1 to 12, and also applied the very same circular to level 13 to 16, which also meant that the extra percentage for that particular financial year, for instance, would be 0.5%. Now, in order to ask for us to check, is it true that the CFO, the CEO received a salary of 18%, we had to pull out the salary report. The actual amount that she received as per her pay slip and the actual amount that went into her bank account, we had to be able to prove, to draw that particular information from the salary department to say what was the actual applicable, what was the actual salary for the CEO 3 months before or a year before that particular year, and what was the actual salary that was received post the salary increase from exactly what went into her bank account. And we had to check from a percentage point of view, and we found out started in the middle of the year. Now, at the end of the financial year, if you add up all what the CFO has received in a six-month salary in that particular financial year, and if you compare it with the salary that she received in a full year, it would therefore kind of indicate that she has now received double the salary. But the fact of the matter is, the previous year was a half year, the next year was a full year. So therefore, it doesn't mean that she has received a salary increase double. It simply means that in this financial year, she has worked the full year. In the previous financial year, she has worked half the year. And the person who then received this information, and by looking at it without knowing, concluded that the CFO has received a salary increase almost double the year, which was not the actual issue. We further went to check the actual salary increase that the CFO has received in terms of what went into his pay, what was agreed in terms of letter of appointment, and also compared to the one that was received beyond that particular issue. And we came to the conclusion that in those financial years, much as they have received the salary increase as per the EPSA framework, the circular applied to their salaries was an incorrect circular. But also, we also picked up one other thing, Chair, was that in the annual report, in the financial annual report, there was a typing error in terms of the salary of the CEO. And that, after it was picked up, the Auditor General was notified that there was an error in the financial report in terms of the salary of the CFO. And in this current financial year's annual report, that error has since been corrected also by the Auditor General, who also admitted when evidence was presented to the Auditor General in terms of the correct figures that they were or they were supposed to be. Now, in a nutshell, these whole other issues in terms of the salary increase, additional percentages that were received by employees from level 13 to 16, the HR committee then had to be able to deal with this particular issue and in terms of what to be done in this particular respect. And the HR committee recommended that for this current financial year, all employees in occupational level 13 to 16 should therefore not be able to receive a salary increase in order to offset the percentages already received in the last 2 years. And the salary increase that they're supposed to receive for this year is higher than, the percentage is higher than the additional percentages that they had received in the last 2 years. That's in terms of personal management, in order to be able to level the playing field in that particular aspect. But we also found out, even though this was not part of the investigation, we also found out that when the CEO received the salary, received the bonus in the financial year 2015-2016, which was the DG referred to, when the CEO received the bonus on the salary, when he received the bonus in the financial year 2015-2016, which bonus was properly achieved, the performance appraisal was signed by the chairperson of the board, and she was the person who qualified for the performance bonus in that particular year. The board approved that she must receive that particular bonus. However, when the payment of that bonus was made, it was not made as per the policy prescript in terms of what bonus was supposed to be applicable. The percentage that was supposed to be applicable was 5%, but the bonus that was paid into the salary was 10%. And this is what the DG was trying to indicate. One of the anomalies that we then found out in the whole aspect was that there was an incorrect payment of the performance bonus. Not that the salary was the salary increase of 18%. That is totally incorrect. But not that the salary increase of the CFO was double from 1 year to the year. That was also totally incorrect improvement. But what we then found out in terms of the salaries was that there was an additional percentage, either 1.5 this year, either 0.5 next year, that was paid out as a result of a wrong application of a circular applicable to level 13 to 16. When this report was then compiled, all the evidentiary materials, proof of payment into salaries, proof of circulars that were applicable in each particular year, proof of the decision that was taken by the board, the evidentiary material was therefore submitted and emailed to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee. This report was supposed to be due on the 30th of June 2017. We like us to also give a comment or an overview in terms of the investigation that we did in terms of Lalena. In terms of Lalena, the allegation was that Lalena is owned by the daughter of Sorkesta, and therefore the CEO, being married to the Mawoka family, her father-in-law has a relation with the Sorkesta family, and therefore the CEO could have, the CEO did not disclose that the owner of Lalena is somebody related to her family. Now, when we did the investigation, we found that Lalena was funded by NAC in 2012. And in 2012, the CEO was not yet appointed as the CEO of NAC. When it was funded in the first year by NAC, there was no relation between the CEO and the family. The CEO was not yet there. And it was funded to a tune of about 50,000 men. Now, when Lalena, when the CEO was appointed in 2013, and Lalena did make another request for funding, at that particular instance, the submission was therefore signed by three executive managers. The submission was signed by the ADM, which is the Arts Development Manager, the CFO, and the CEO. And the submission, in terms of the surplus and expired project policy, it indicates that a staff member, a panel member, or a council member may identify a project. And once they've identified the project, that must be therefore be brought to the attention of ESCO. A submission was therefore made to ESCO in terms of flagship, in terms of the policy, and ESCO presided over the submission by the letter of the application by the letter. ESCO then signed, then recommended that this project be taken to council for approval. The minutes of ESCO that were signed, that were done, and the submission were available, and we also have a copy of it. The same submission was therefore taken to council. When it was taken to council, unfortunately, it happens to be the very last meeting of council when it was dissolved. And everybody in council was quite unsettled because the council was its last meeting and it was dissolved. And the submission was therefore discussed. But now, when the minutes of that council meeting were to be signed, the chairperson says, but we have been dissolved. Why must I not come and sign the issues? And there were issues in the, there were issues in terms of why you are so late in the time you bring in the minutes to me. And those minutes remain therefore unsigned. Now when we did the investigation, we could see it in the minutes, but the minutes were not yet adopted or signed by the chairperson. Now we had to go back and retrieve the audio recording of the council meeting to check if it's true this project was deliberated on. And we found that with the audio that truly so, this project was decided over by council and council had approved it. Now the question therefore becomes that was the CEO at the time when the submission was made to both ESCO and to council aware as to who the owner of the organization is, and whether if she knew at the time met with the staff, we have met with employees in general, and we have to come to certain conclusions after we've done the investigation. And unfortunately, what really is disturbing is how much wrong information was sent to you in our presence. And when we wanted to verify that information that we were told, we could not verify that. No information could come forward. And we said to them, if you can't give us the information to us, feel free to send it directly to the concerned committee, because maybe you don't want to give it to us. But I must say, we had the most cordial relationship with employees. We had the most cordial relationship with the trade unions right now. We have staff management meetings. We have workshop with the staff. And it has been a very testing time for the board, because in terms of the Act, we're only allowed to have a minimum of about 4 meetings per year. But we had to have extraordinary meetings in order to deal with these issues, because there's no way we can deal with these issues in one particular meeting. It's practically impossible. So we had to have a number of repeated meetings in order to deal with the board, through committees, through ESCO, and through council. And Chair, when you left, I was worried what you leaving me with, because it was about a week after I was appointed as a chairperson. I was horrified about what I had, but I couldn't find it. It's not there. But we had to go through a long period to understand, you know, there can't be smoke that's right. Where is this thing coming from? And we are at a position where we are quite certain that we know where this thing is coming from. We know who orchestrated the whole issue. We know who provided this wrong information. And if it was at any particular instance that the executive was wrong, we'll say some of the executive was wrong. But we also can't just say we are wrong if there's no evidence that points out that we are wrong. And there was a specific issue in terms of the suspension of the secretary from the board. In doing all this investigation, one will have to admit that one has to read a whole lot. And one will have to look into minutes and decisions taken by boards in the past. It was quite horrific to find out that board decisions, remember, minutes of board meetings is a record of board decisions. It was quite disturbing to find out most of board meetings, minutes are missing. And when those specific ones that we want to take and verify to say, did this decision, was decision taken in this particular board meeting, when you listen to the recordings and the minutes, is completely out. Now, meaning that board decisions are not taken as they were, but they are subject to the determination of a third party. And that is the board, we find ourselves at a very high risk that if any person was to take us to the public protector or any other institution, would not be able to defend the decision, whether a decision taken by us or the treatment for cancer, we take it with the lock, stock, and barrel. Now, not only council meetings, but committee meetings, board meetings, and expo meetings, minutes were incorrect. Minutes were misinterpreted. Minutes were not signed. Action plans were not done. Issues raised in this particular meeting could not find themselves in the next meeting. Somebody said that I don't like what the board is thinking here. This meeting, this matter that has been discussed in this, when it's supposed to reflect itself in the next board meeting, it disappeared. And unfortunately, with all this allegation that was made, it forced the board to go and retrieve all the previous minutes and check them. And this is where we found out that we are sitting on a time bomb. Particularly with Fredy Atella having gone to the public protector about certain decisions that were taken by council. And we then have to also read the policies of the organization. You should have noted earlier on when they stated that the induction of council members happened on the 23rd and 24th of February 2017. But the NAC induction happened in August. Why such a long period? Because we as council came to a certain point where we said, at this stage, we can't trust any information that has been given to us. It looks like every information that has been given to us, we must now go back and check it ourselves. Because you tell us this, when we go and verify that in the minutes, it says something else. You tell us this, and when we have to go to the police, it says something else. Now, that has taken the board a considerable time of investigation and for us to come to decisions that we've taken. In terms of action plans, we're going to have the following. Phase one, start with this one, we end up with this one, this is the process we have to follow. But I think that maybe provides an idea in terms of what has happened. If there's any questions, I'm more happy to take them.
Okay. Another question. When the chair was making a presentation, it just reminded me of the previous chair of PENSAL and the other chair. Who was the gentleman who was the ACC? It just reminded me of Madiba and Faye. But then maybe perhaps one day we'll come back to what I'm saying. Of he reminded me when Basutu was with Labo Kadiwono. Chairperson, on the matter of the salary, I would love to recommend here in the committee that we have our own inquiry as parliament on the matter. Look, the matter is not as simple as it's putting it on the table to us. Some of us, we've been shop stewards for a long time, and so Honorable Makondo and Honorable Lani would say it, and we had an opportunity of sitting in all these bargaining councils where you bargain for salaries. So when it comes to salaries, we might not be expert, but we do understand how inflated the salaries are done. Because when you are giving the presentation, I was expecting perhaps that you would be talking about perhaps the total package, and then you give us a scenario if it's a total package, it's the 18%. But you then, I couldn't pick up your discussion, but I still recommend that, Jay, let's have our own as parliament inquiry on the matter in totality and see where does that 18% comes from. Is it coming from the total package or is it coming from the, because a salary is not an actual, when you're talking about a salary of a person, it's not the actual rents that are going to be deposited in your account. There's a lot that is entailed there. You must increase your housing if you want your allowance, all of those things, but I don't want to get to those details yet. So which we're making in the presentation that we just head here, because when you come with something that is that huge as a presentation, we expect you to also deal with those matters and then you convince us. I'm not convinced, unfortunately, Chairperson, where I'm sitting, I'm not like to, I am not convinced about what you just presented with the salary. So that's why I'm really saying we need to have that chair. Maybe I'll be convinced after Parliament has done its own because Parliament has got all the resources and everything to say. And I still say, Chair, we need also the salary whatever agreement that is there in the entity, we need that. Because from the lay point of view where I'm sitting, salary increase to SKTBSA, you cannot give the higher levels the higher percentage. They are going down. I'm sure you understand what I'm saying. If your lower level employees, you are giving them 6%, the next range of the employees, should the middle manager or whoever, will get lesser than that, will not get more than that. We are different. I'm sure my answer is that. So that's why I'm saying, by the person again, I lay there, I was born by now, Baba is that. Because we cannot have entities that will be doing their own things outside the law. You need to do your own thing within the context of the law. Once you do something outside the framework of the law, then at Cosmetic Trade, you need to do whatever within the framework of the law, of the law, Chair. So those I'm not asking a question, I'm not expecting an answer on what I just said, because my point is Parliament has to do its own investigation. It's high time that, Chair, these investigations that are coming to us as Parliament, we have them, because we cannot be taken for granted. We need to test them, whether those investigations, as they are coming, are they correct? Because what we get now, we get it from the, we get whatever from the authority, the reporting authority.
now the conclusion part of it that is coming here, we can't take this conclusion because we don't have all the facts. So maybe some of them are not here, because I'm not so sure when they make a presentation tell them already left and they requested to this aid, but I wanted to know the matter. One of the members, let's look at the matter that we need to sit down. And if it's the first entity that we need to review, whatever that is brings here in here, we will have to do that unfortunately. We have to start from somewhere. Because now the report might be looking gloomy or whatever. Kodwa uthi xa ujonga ngaphantsi i-Q1 labor needs aid from phakathi bazawuthi understand the report. So enkosi, ndiyabulela.
I'll try and be as short as possible. Two quick matters. The first one, you see, the value of money 2 years ago, the value of 100 rand 2 years ago, it's not the same today. So, when you talk money, you need skill to unpack your rands. That's the first thing that the board must understand. You took a decision, and I think that decision has got serious flaws, very serious flaws, value-wise. And indeed, perhaps the recommendations by my colleague would then suffice. The issue that I'd like to raise here, and it's a serious matter, and we are not going to back down on that matter. Chairperson, we have been to entities and we have received complaints from people who get suspended after we have left for giving information to ourselves. We are not going to take anybody's word to say it is not because of your visit, because it was supposed to happen 1 month after you left. Can't be correct. Actually, that statement is very flawed. You cannot justify it in the way you responded to it. The fact of the matter is you are not the first entity we've visited, and you are not the last entity we will be visiting, and we will come back to NEC. When a person complains to us that after you came to the NEC, after I disclosed this to you, this is what happened. We can't close our eyes and say, okay, sorry, it's fine, okay, we won't allow that. You see, we are governed by law. There's a rule of law in the country. There's a very important clause here, both in the Constitution and in our rule book. Our rule book is derived from from powers and privileges of Parliament. That's what governs our responsibility. And that rule that says if a person presents to us any information, that information cannot be subjected to any other power, save for perjury, if lies were told, or for criminal offense, if indeed there's criminality that happened. Information given to us is given to us and is protected. And we're not going to allow anybody, any entity, be it anyone including the minister, to override that power. It belongs here. We have complaints in our forum about what happened to your officials. After we can't close our eyes. We have a responsibility to engage that matter. If needs be, we will have to subject it to Rule 168, where under oath people will have to present it. People will go to jail. If you know the matter, if the person says it is because of this and you say no, that person is telling us because if it is a suspicion, we subject it to some activity. But that must be clear. So we have to protect anybody that appears before Parliament and give evidence. So I think that's where I would like to end the chair and say, even to other entities that are here, if we ask for information from an entity and we get it,
corruption, if there's corruption and there's a whistleblower, that person is protected by law and by the constitution. We can't, what about the parliament? The parliament, we are losing the focus, we are banging in, but again, the person is stolen. And then parliament has been sanctioned. The supreme law of this country is the constitution, and all are subject to it. That's how it is. Then they give evidence. Then we'll be able to know the truth.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Honorable Pilakuli.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to confirm from the funding session and the one of that project for Mahlangu. On page 59 up to 65 on the annual report, they were talking about funding craft individuals. My observation, Chair, is that only 5, if not 6 provinces or individuals funded from 6 provinces. But there is a higher number from KZN, 91 if I'm not mistaken. When I checked Northern Cape and Western Cape, I think it's 2 individuals, 2. Mpumalanga is 6 and Gauteng is 6. I just want to check about the remaining provinces. And I want to be briefed about the criteria you need. Whether it's nomination or it's calls for funding. Secondly, the one of Mamahlangu, I just want to check if NEC is funding the project. Because as the portfolio committee were there, they were complaining that even NEC is not funding them. And I see the picture here. I don't know whether it's only the PIC which is here, or the PIC is here because they are assisting them.
Can you quickly respond to those two? Because I think we need to take the next entity.
Thank you, Chair. I must say that I welcome the recommendations by the members of the portfolio committee. I think it is also, it will be good for us that we bring this matter to rest. We also don't want to live our lives out there in cloud, that we don't know where it's coming from or where does it originate from. So it's important that we also find closure in this matter, and I'm also welcome to have the parliamentary investigation on this matter so that we can all bring this matter to finality. So it's most welcome. The issue of Mahlangu, we have also noted the provisions of the Partakers Disclosures Act. We were very aware that we don't want to find ourselves turning on a very fine line, and we have to make sure that we not get ourselves into that. But again, you're most welcome to be able to have that investigation. And in terms of the craft, Madam not compliant or they did not submit anything or there were no applications in those provinces. That's why you find differences in terms of how many people funded in a particular province you have. That depends on the quality and the number of applications received in a particular discipline.
I think we have debated this issue with the department and their programs and entities, that you can't just fold your arms and wait for applications from Guangqamash or Mqanduli, where you know exactly as the entity that your application, the manner in which you crafted your application form, is not going to be user friendly to umama was Mqanduli, who can actually do us. So I think this is what we have discussed, and we have said it clearly that you don't fold arms and wait. You go out there to those provinces where you are not receiving applications or where you receive applications that don't meet your criteria. You go there, you assist the people, because as I said earlier, these entities are meant to be organs of people's power, where people feel that the entity stands for us. The entity is responding to the needs of the people, women in a rural area. And it's important for us to, we've been saying this from 2014, when we first came in here, the department can attest to this, that we've been saying to the department, we are from different provinces, and we are public representatives. And when you say, we've built 20 libraries, we want to know, where did you build these libraries? So that we have a picture as public representatives. So I think it's important, but I think maybe we will discuss this some other time, because really we are pressed for time. We can't proceed with this debate and discussion now with NDC. But I think my last word on this is that the issues that have been raised by the portfolio committee have been noted. We are going to have a plan of how we implement the issues that we have raised. And as I said when we began, when this meeting started, I said, we are also, because there are so many things, officials, they can mess you up. There are instances where we feel that we need to work with the legal unit here in Parliament. We've already talked to the legal unit to say there are issues that have to do with consequence management in the department and in entities. You need to sit down with us so that we understand clearly how we can deal with these issues. What Honorable Matangu was saying is something that I said from the onset, that there is one thing that we can never accept. And that one thing that we can never accept is something that keeps us awake at night of people who, after disclosing information, and I think this information needs to be tested. What did the people say? And is it true? Is it true or is it false? I think it's important, as we were saying earlier. Because if in any entity you do wrong, and the NSDF knows this, something happens in their entity. They got a clean audit. We got information. We told them. They are in. This thing has happened to the conclusion. They don't know about it. They were told by the portfolio committee that there is this thing happening in your entity. Really? Yes. Happening, they investigated and they found that it is happening. This is how these things operate. Officials in an entity
I think the issues that need the attention of the portfolio committee, basically the clean audit, the entities are qualified as the credit. So they need to go back to a clean audit because we are worried about the regression, but they know where the regression comes from. I think it's one of the projects that was advertised. But also, Chair, there were issues that were raised by staff around HR issues, around travel, excessive travel, and just the wastage of money that came to the department, and we asked the entity to respond. They responded, but then our minister then communicated with the chair of the board that he will institute, the department will institute its independent forensic investigation, and the minister has communicated that also to members of the portfolio committee. The audit is taking place, and the chair then indicated that they will cooperate with the department. unveil all documents, and the once the report is finalized, we will also share it with members of the portfolio committee. But the main thing is the regression and all those issues that we are discussing.
But I think what's important is what I have articulated earlier, that as long as you do the right thing all the time, you don't fear whistleblowers. As long as you do the right thing all the time, they can blow their whistle, but you know, you are confident that I've done everything within the legal framework. As Honorable Sulizi was saying, that anything and everything should be done within the legal framework. As a result, what we have done is to ask the researcher, our researcher, the researcher of the committee, when any entity is going to present, we want the act, you know, that established that entity. We want the policy of that particular entity, so that whatever they say should be on the basis of the act and the policies that they have as their entity. So it's important for the entities to note that you need to do the right thing every time for you to be successful. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and Honorable members of the committee. I will take you through fairly rapidly our annual report presentation and then conclude with what I consider to be critical areas that we may want to throw the spotlight on. The table of contents, I think, that summarizes what we have covered. And the enabling legislation we operate within. I think the mandate speaks to the area of work that we cover. I just want to single out the third one, which is about development and ensuring that the film and video industry is supported and grown. I'm mentioning that because it is quite important to bear in mind that our role is a developmental one. The vision and mission, I think, that is quite clear about the nation's aspiration and celebrating our diversity. And indeed, our mission to ensure that we engage all of the stakeholders. Strategic overview, Chairperson, is an area that we consider to be underscoring the importance of the foundation and indeed the work of the board. And in this particular regard, I want to single out the last but one point, which is about promoting the South African film industry locally and internationally. That point in particular, at our recent strategy session of the board, we also took a conscious decision that we must embrace Africa focus as a key strategic area of the board. I'm mentioning that so that we have an appreciation that when we say international, we also single out Africa as an area of specific focus. Governance, these are the where we ensure that risk is identified and governance is ensured, and also to work closely with the Auditor General and the internal audit structures in the organization. Now, our financial statements, briefly speaking to the performance, the overall, is that we've had projects that received a conditional grant from the DAC. One is about the development of film hubs, infrastructure project across the country. Now, film hubs, this is where we will ensure that we promote cinema going. We actually set infrastructure in place where people can go to local centers to watch film, what historically in the townships we used to call bioscope. But we're talking about now creating that infrastructure to make it possible for local communities to have those film hubs. We have partnerships with various stakeholders to make sure that we take our agenda forward. These include the KZN Film Commission and also the NYDA to ensure that we advance the program and agenda of the youth. But there are also other activities like international film festivals. Cannes is one. DISCOP is a television and film market. And these are areas where our financial performance is demonstrated. But I can also highlight the continued support we received from the MICT CETA. In the last financial year, we received a grant of 20.6 million rand. This grant comes in very handy to support the bursary and internship programs that we undertake as the NLVF. But it is not only about expenditure. Where possible, we also make sure that there are recoupments. There are films that have done well, where we have recovered money that was invested, and these are films such as Kumba, Happiness is a Four-Letter Word, Love the One You Love, and Number Number. And then we go into the financial figures, just to get an overview of the financial figures, and I will ask the CEO just to go through that and the non-financial performance area speaks to those figures as to how we have performed in terms of the actual budget that was allocated and how that budget was spent and the values in the budget. CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe first to also make the portfolio committee aware that we've asked the secretary to distribute the updated presentation, which she assures me had already been emailed to the committee. And the only changes are everything is exactly the same, except that we've added from page 26 onwards additional slides, which are the graphics presentation of some of the stats which summarize the information that already been communicated to portfolio committee. But otherwise, the document will be able to follow. As we have, were asked to be brief and keep to the time, I would just to look at the summary of the figures. If we look at the financial statement, looking at what was received, and focusing on the recoupment and the money that we were able to get over and above the DAC allocation. Sorry, let me get the correct page 13. The DAC allocation is stated there being 122 million. Over and above that, we do have a partnership that we've been able to secure largely through the for the SAFTAs, where we have been able to secure
secure private funding from sponsors. We know that we've had sponsors from My Cafe, which was the biggest sponsor, but other sponsors that were able to assist us in terms of coming to the party in order to host the South African Film and Television Awards. The chairperson has already spoken about the CETA, which forms part of that amount of the partnerships, what we've been able to attract. KZN Film Commission also came on board in order to partner with us in terms of some of the activations we've had. We've also mentioned the CETA mandatory grant. Also, if you look at the other section, it's made up of the CETA mandatory grant, which is a recruitment from the CETA for the amount that we invest for internal training. And the rest of the money there was made up from the sale of the SAFTA tickets, because from last year, we've started to also sell the tickets in order to make up the funds for the South African Film and Television Awards. As also it was requested that we focus on the key areas when it comes to the performance report, even from the AG, it was indicated that the quality of our APP and the reporting on that front is to be commended. In terms of the report last year, we only had one line item that was unmet, and that related to training providers, where we funded one less than what we had committed to in terms of the APP. And the main reason for that being that we recently introduced a requirement that all the funding, all the training providers that we fund need to be accredited. And it has been a challenge in terms of some of the training providers not having that requirement, and therefore us not being able to meet to fund them. Other than that, as it is clear from the presentation, most of the line items were met, and there's also quite a lot that were exceeded, where we have funded more projects than we had committed to. And the main reason being that most of the projects were asked for funds that are less than what we had budgeted for. So in that way, we were able to fund a lot more in terms of number. However, where I would like to get to is to show the demographics that, apologies, I think the presentation that is on this laptop is not the one that is the updated one, and the one that I've given to the members. The CFO can bring the members to speak in the meantime. However, for the sake of time, I would like to proceed. The funded projects, as you would look at page 27 of the presentation that you have before you, we have done a stats that reflect the provincial spread. I note from the question from the other member earlier around the provincial spread, and this continues to be a challenge that they face as well. As you will see in page 27, that our funding in terms of provincial spread is still a huge majority being Gauteng and Western Cape. And we are not just sitting and waiting as much as we do pull our calls, but over and above that, we do roadshows in provincial roadshows in order to make sure that we see an increase in terms of applications from various provinces. And the numbers that you see increasing, whether in Limpopo, you see there's a slight increase, Eastern Cape and KZN, that is as a result of direct efforts that we have made. And there's also been an increase in applications. However, we are still battling in terms of a lot of those non-Gauteng and KZN provinces being approved. However, looking at the numbers of the application shows that we are making inroads in that regard. In terms of approvals at this stage, approvals for production, chairperson, however, we are, the applications have increased. So we have managed to raise the interest because of the interventions that we have had. However, we still have, we are working more on making sure that the applications are successful, and we are doing roadshows to help on that. So next time we come, we are hoping that the number will be different, because we are putting effort towards it, chairperson.
And now the chairperson also indicated the strategy decision that the council took on having a tiered approach to funding. And we said we are going to split funding into three. Tier one is the highly developed filmmakers that have got high experience and they can go raise their own money. A decision was made that we're going to reduce our funding towards that tier because we are focusing on development. Tier two are the middle kind of filmmakers that have been involved in television but have not yet grown into film. So we wanted to focus more on those. But even more than that, we decided that tier three is going to be where we're going to spend most of our time, and that is the emerging filmmakers. So this graph really shows how the decision that was made by council over 3 years ago to spread the funding is bearing fruit, because we can see that the money is moving away from the tier two, the tier one filmmakers, who are the high-end filmmakers that in the past have always been the automatic beneficiaries of the NFEF funding. But right now we are only limiting funding to those to very minimum per year. And just to add that, that comes with its own challenges in terms of industry not sharing that view with us, because they believe that we should just continue to fund only those that are successful and not invest our money towards the emerging filmmakers. And we've also just showing a graph by race. We're also looking that in terms of our transformation policies that we put in place has given us the results that you see there, that we have over 60% funding going to black people and 21% white people. And the 13%, I think, is an indication of the way that we capture the information. Some people do not choose not to tick the race box, and which impacts the stats that we are able to collect. And in terms of gender, we are not where we would like to be, but we are 64% male and 23% female in terms of the beneficiaries from our funding. In looking at page 35 also, I'm jumping to that just to show the trajectory in terms of the bursaries that we've approved over the years. You will see how our partnership with the CETA has managed for us to move the numbers to 267 from 54, which was the case 5 years ago. And the racial split still favors over 90% black people, and the gender split is at 50-50. Provincial, once again, Gauteng and Western Cape are leading, but that also is informed by where the tertiary institutions are there that offer the film and television training. But we are also not sitting back, we are engaging with tertiary institutions in terms of helping them to have this film and television curriculum, but also improve it, because the applications that we are receiving are also still very much favoring the public entities, the private tertiary institutions, and we're trying to draw students more into the public sector. We also have an internship program which has been around the country, and we've seen an increase in terms of the number of interns that we have brought into the party in the last few years, and this is shown in the graphs on page 39. This is the provincial split for the interns, and Gauteng also leading the pack on that run. However, Eastern Cape has also in the past few years been a recent entry with the partnership that we've had with placement employers there. In fact, the next slide, I didn't put the slide that shows the biggest employer is Bay Television. I think they take up around 15 of those interns that we've been able to place with Bay Television. Now to get to some of the issues that I think were referred to by the department, even in the introduction, NSVF, we have also had a situation where staff raised issues and submitted a memorandum of grievances to myself as the CEO, and ultimately sent it through to the department, where they had a list of issues that were issues of complaint that they had against the NSVF. As a CEO at the time, then I set up a special task team to deal with it internally, and in working with the council through the HR committee, putting a direct oversight over that process, I just want to report to the committee in detail over the next slide on the issues raised and the action that we have taken. But on this page 41, I've just summarized high level the issues that came out of that document. But in the, I will go through some of them as well, because progress has been made on some of the issues. A lot of the issues have been resolved. However, you will see in the last pages where there still are issues that have not yet resolved. However, we articulate exactly where we are with those issues, where the reasons why we have not been able to action some of the demands from staff, and what action we are taking. So just to summarize the issues that have been already addressed, the issues that that staff raised really related to remuneration issues, and within they ranged from the salary scales that that the staff felt they're getting, but also there were issues relating to threatened check. There was a concern about tax implications if they are paid in one sum as opposed to different sums. But we've addressed all of those issues, the issues of payment of bonuses, when those are paid, linked to audit, and how the calculation gets worked out. We've clarified all of those issues with staff. The issue of the December closure, staff feeling it was taking off a lot of their leave. We've also reached a consensus with staff around, you know, the dates that we're going to close, and we've made sure that they participated in the process. There was also issues raised around staff feeling they are not given preferential treatment to positions, and there was the process of internal adverse and internal recruitment first that has been put in place. There was the issue of allocated resources. People, you know, staff feeling they do not have resources to work outside of the office, and audit has been done, and where staff deserved such resources, those have been made available. There was a certain input made around how the organization can be made to be more innovative and collaborative, and as well as the internship program, there were ideas that were put forward which we have put in place. There's also issues around international travel within staff, because as it was said earlier, promoting the film industry globally is part of our mandate as per the Act, so it often requires that staff do partake in such interactions that take place outside of South Africa. And so we had to communicate very clearly what the process is on which staff members get to be able to participate and do the work that needs to be done outside of the country. There was also issues of confidentiality, staff feeling that if they discuss their issues with HR, they can't trust confidentiality, request that there be an external wellness company appointed, which we have we put out a call, and the SVM process was followed. In fact, we've just appointed a company about 3 weeks ago, a wellness service provider that will be providing those services to the NSVF. And there was also an issue on the salary scales, that there was no, they didn't have information around the salary bands, which we have since disclosed, and one-on-one engagements have been had with the, you know, with the staff on those issues, even though there still remains an issue where there is a feeling that staff are, you know, do not feel they're being paid according to market rates. And some of the staff were below the minimum market rates, on which we then implemented an additional increase for those staff who were in those junior positions in order to bring them up to minimum band. However, the long-term solution around that issue is we have appointed an organizational design service provider who is going to look at the issue
the organizational design, as well as salary benchmarking, as well as KPIs and job descriptions, because the NFEF has evolved a lot in the recent past around the work that it does and the projects that it needs to handle. And some of the pressure was being felt by staff that the job, that the roles that they are fulfilling now are actually no longer aligned to their job descriptions, and hence maybe they feel that they are not being compensated accordingly. So we have that process currently in place, and it will be completed in time for recommendations to be taken into the December council meeting, because it will have budgetary implications, and then those can be put into the APP submitted to the department, and if it is approved, then it can be implemented on the 1st of April in 2018. From page 46 onwards, I've just articulated the matters that are still ongoing, that have not yet been resolved, but it just lists the action that we've taken so far, and what is still outstanding, and that also includes timelines in terms of when we are committing to take some of the action. I will leave it there, Chairperson, because of time, unless I should still go through each one. No.
Communication is key in any relationship. This is what we said from day one. If there's no communication, there is no relationship. Within an organization, this is what we said to NAC when we were there. It's very important for you to communicate in any organization at all levels. Nothing must be left to chance, but I will. You need to give info, because if you don't give information, people are going to be suspicious. You need to give information to say, this is the budget, this is how much you get. All this information that you give now is information that you have been with yourself long ago. Policies, workshop them on the policies. So that everybody knows what is happening here. Everybody knows where we want to go and how to get there. And it's important for MPs to really, because
I just have three questions with regard to funding and also to bursaries. One, on your slide 29, you indicated black, white, and blank. Now, was that, I'm not sure about what that blank is referring to, what which group it is. And also one thing that is not clear, although you've given me that, I just need to ask you, what is your, the intra-race category? Because we know that the term blackness can be particularly exclusive rather than inclusive, because we know that blackness is not a homogenous category. So I would like us to be very clear in terms of that one, because I don't understand that. I ask that particularly against the background, when you say bursary recipients by province, Northern Cape, zero. And I know there are three people that applied for bursary by gender, one male, female, and two male. By race, two black, one black in particular. So I just need to ascertain in terms of what is, how come there is no application? Because I know one of these boys is already more than 200,000 rand in debt. I think he's doing his third year or second year and he hasn't got any funding from any state. Thank you.
not use 10%. And I think with the immigration, they are inviting us to visit them. That's how that possibly did not necessarily require that attention, but I think it's a question that you have not listened to people sufficiently. As much as you have systems, I can see in your presentation you are creating avenues for our engagement, but what we find to be problematic in most instances is that the CEO would convene a meeting and tell staff, now we're meeting on this day, listen, city, and fail to listen to them. But I can hear, we could hear the report, I mean, we can see the report that there are areas where they raise concern and you try to meet them and whatever. But I think it's crucial that when it comes to those kind of indicators, leadership, that the board should not just hold its hands and direct management to deal with those issues. It's a call for attention to the leadership. And if you fail to respond, you go the route that the PACOS have gone. The PACOS have been in the media, and the next thing, they are now in the race. And that's when things have spat out, but then the media, and they went very red. But when the leadership there started to listen to the guidance that the chair was raising earlier on, they are finding their feet. Same, Mr. Mandela, they're in the media for the wrong reasons, but after they really listened and learned from others that are doing well, they are going cleaner. So it's small things that makes the difference. So leadership, ubulalele abantu bona singaboni izitulo lezi esizibone laphaya ku-TV. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you very much. Brief responses, please, NSDF, so that we get off.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to deal with the point the Chairperson made first, and that is communication. And to say, Chairperson, we take very serious note of the input and advice you have given about taking communication quite seriously. And I think it speaks even to the point that Honorable Mahlangu made about how board should ensure that communication is effective at all levels. And then development, if I can work my way back. Development touches at the very heart of our mandate, and that is why even in my opening remarks I talked about NFDF being engaged in a developmental program. And this is demonstrated by the work we have done over the last 2 years. In fact, the impact is only beginning to show now. This is the first annual report that has the very early stages of our development impact. And that impact is in the area of funding for the previously disadvantaged individuals. How we actually broke up the industry into tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. we've actually moved funding away from the historically empowered producers of film, and we located them in tier one, and that funding is now moved to tier two and tier three. So effectively what we've done, we've lowered the barriers to entry. We're having now more people entering the film industry. But also development in terms of bursaries. We have more, and by that, Honorable Khulbom, black women, African, Indian, and colored. We have actually allocated more bursaries in the last few years to the historically disadvantaged groups. So development, Honorable Member, is something that we will continue. We're not there yet, but it's a commitment. And it also speaks to that slide about Mpumalanga being zero. I can assure you that when we come back to this portfolio committee, that zero would have moved. In fact, I signed letters in the last 2 months to the MEC of Mpumalanga, requesting that we begin to have a forum and ensure that we put in place structures in that province and assist them, as we did in Limpopo. Limpopo now, they have plans underway for the Limpopo Film Commission, largely through because of the interventions we have made. And that also speaks to the continuous stakeholder engagements we have throughout the provinces. So we're not sitting back, we're going out to the people to make sure that we respond to their needs. Lastly, on the media, and then the CEO will deal with those issues of communication, as the page 39 slide. The question of the media, Honorable Mahlangu, is a matter of great concern. We have noted that, and it's something that is receiving urgent attention. Internally, the HR committee of the board is actually working closely with the CEO to address those issues that she highlighted. So this matter has been escalated to the board. Number two, internally at board level, we have appointed a task team, which is chaired by the deputy chair of the board, to look into some of the issues that have been raised. And thirdly, the Minister of Arts and Culture has instituted a forensic investigation into all the issues that have been raised. And this process is now underway. As chairperson of the board, I wrote back to the minister to say, we welcome the development to institute a forensic investigation. And once that process is completed, we would like that report to be tabled to the portfolio committee so that we know what the findings are. So that matter, I will leave it there for now, honorable members. I'll ask the CEO then to deal fairly rapidly with the other issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. May
In fact, I'm outsourcing gender. Gender empowerment. It is in her issues. But it speaks, and that goes up the slide, and it speaks to the developmental agenda of the NFL. No, thank you, Honorable Member. I welcome that question. In fact, the question of gender in the NFVF is a very, very important question. So So much that the entire leadership, executive leadership of the NMVF, is actually, it's like they were appointed by the Women's League. You know, the CEO, the CFO, the heads, all the heads. So, and they are appointed by this board because we pay special attention to them. But not only, honorable member, not only in terms of the leadership of the organization, how we award bursaries, the gender focus is very paramount in our consideration. We have been in the last 2 years driving the agenda of animation, one area of film that was underrepresented. And in that area, we've been pushing deliberately the female applicants. So gender is very important to us. The recent slate, which is funding over 3 years in partnership with DTI, that funding has gone to a female-owned and run production company. So whether it's in film or in bursaries or even in production that have even won acclaim internationally, they are film-led. The film that was that won awards recently in Durban International Film Festival, which is international, it's a film-owned production house. So yes, gender, honorable member, is an agenda that we drive quite vigorously. Member. In fact, I may even hasten to add that over the last 2-3 years, we have seen a phenomenal growth in terms of women representation. We started out from a very disadvantaged background, whether or in fact even race, let alone the gender question. There was no one in the film industry. It was just one section of the South African society. And now the pie chart has changed. Nothing should stop us even to change it in terms of the gender balance.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have actually ring-fenced funding, especially for women filmmakers. And they make, we give an opportunity to a female-owned entity every year for a period of 3 years to help 10 women filmmakers to make films a year. And then the same applies also to young people. We appoint a youth-owned production company every year in order for them to mentor 10 young people to make 10 films per year. So that is just but one of the ways that we have actually putting money behind the commitment that we have made. I think the just one other point, the regression that was asked by the honourable member. I think results out of just one project, which is the office renovation project that we had, where the AG held a different view in terms of how we should have treated that. And it was their view that we should have gone out on tender and gotten one service provider instead of us engaging the different service providers directly, which was done from our side to be cost effective on the project and to avoid each of those individual service providers putting their markup. But we are working closely now with the AG as well as the internal auditors so that they assist us if there's any internal policies that we need to change in order to guard against such situations in the future, but also to assist us in how we deal with the rest of the work that still needs to be done around our offices because the project is not yet completed. So that is that. But also I know that on some of the slides it was blank for Mpumalanga and other areas. However, I only show funding projects. However, we we have funded marketing and distribution in Mpumalanga and in Northwest and in Northern Cape. The only film festival that takes place there is the one funded by the NFEF. And in Mpumalanga and the Northwest, we've recently funded film festivals there. So it may not be production of content, but we are funding in that province in terms of the other areas of the film venue chain. Just on the last slide, you mentioned the issue of departure of staff. I think the last slide indicated some of the ongoing challenges in terms of attracting and retaining staff. Yes, there is a view that you can say, and it has been raised in terms of low staff morale, which we are putting a lot of things in action in order to address. However, there still remains issues that our salaries cannot be as competitive as they could be. Also, we have a flat structure that sometimes becomes a problem once people have been in the organization for a long time, that growth opportunities are very limited. So we do find that we do lose people because of alternative opportunities, not because there's anything that the organization could have done in order to address those. I am not aware of a staff member that has received a warning in the last, in the recent past. Unfortunately, I do not have the data of the list of staff members that have warnings, maybe from the previous, but I can certainly say there hasn't been a staff member that has recently been given a warning, unless maybe you can provide more specific information around that.
We'll communicate it to you. But while I'm on the floor, Chair, one of the things that I find to be working better for organizations, especially when it comes to entrepreneurs, that if you can prove that your approach has actually yielded better results, comparisons with a different approach, it does help to lessen the stress between the organization and the age. So disclosure is the name of the game. And sometimes if you take the initiative of saying, you know what, we believe that we have to go this route in order to achieve result X. And you go to the HR's office as an accounting officer and say, you know what, we have seen this thing happening. And these are the outcomes. Our view is that we'd like to follow a particular approach in order to achieve result X. Through our approach, we save more as compared to this. It helps you in preparation for when they come to audit and say, we agreed with you, and so on and so on. It does help.
Thank you.
There was an issue raised by Honorable Football of the blank space raised.
Oh, as I said, I think the blank is the capturing, the data capturing, which as you say, like that not all applicants tick that that raised box. Otherwise, the question was answered by the chairperson in terms of our definition of black, it is the African, Indian, and colored.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the responses. I am mindful of the fact that you may not have the statistics, but I will submit an assessment question in this regard so that I can have an indication what the statistics look like in terms of internal candidates.
And I think also the issue that you raised of the students, the student.
department. They don't respond. I'm telling you the honest fact, they know. They don't respond. And issues that you could respond to tell a person in Mthatha that we can't renovate your art center this financial year because we've already identified, you know, they will not respond to those people. The people apply and the people now ask me, how do I know why they have not been responded to? I don't know. It's the duty of the department to do that. So now I have to chase officials. Why haven't you responded to this project? You know, department, please respond to people. Even if the response is negative, give them the information. What I said earlier, tell them this is the reason why we can't, because you can't fund everything. There's only one financial year. One financial year from March to from April to March. So you say we can't, this financial year we cannot, but we'll look into it. People just want to know that you care. This is the only thing people within your entity, outside your entity, that's the only thing people want to know, that you care. So please do this.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also on that note, that in closing, because we have been doing a lot more of that as the NFAF in terms of giving feedback, because our rejection numbers have quadrupled because the applications are more. So we're rejecting a lot more people. But in rejecting them, we give them feedback and comment on that, which has increased the pressure internally in terms of the internal staff having to do more. So we also look forward to the support of the portfolio committee when we come in for recommendations for support for additional budget in compensating our staff who now have to do a lot more in terms of the roadshows in all the provinces, writing up feedback for all the 9,000 applicants that we have to reject. We trust that we will get the support from the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. If there are no more questions, we would like to thank you for your presentation and your responses. But the one question that I thought of being to ask from the DEC, that the communication lines, as I said earlier, that communication is key in this relationship. When you communicate with council, who do you talk to? When communicating with an entity, do you talk to the right, to the CEO or to the chairman?
Honorable Chair, once I communicate to the chair, I do it via the minister. Minister will write to the chair. But as the technical member, we communicate directly. The other issues in terms of communication, we keep each other in the loop. So with NFAF, there are no challenges.
But I think it is good if when you're communicating with the CEO, you copy the chair. Because the chair is the accounting authority. Tina, we won't ask them anything. We're going to ask the chair, and the chair will say, let me go and ask the CEO. The chair should be, you know, on board. The chair should know what is actually. I mean, in all the entities, not necessarily the NFAF, all the entities, so that the board has grip of the situation. There is no, nothing that happens without the board knowing. So you are empowering your board members by them having the knowledge of everything that is happening, not only NFAF, but across the board. And what we have said we're going to do with the portfolio committee.
host of the Playhouse and said, this is our meeting, we need to talk as the CEOs of the Playhouses. Then we have the heritage sets. So besides the broader meeting of the DG engaging with the CEOs and minister with the chairperson, there are those sectors specific issues, but also the CFOs of entities meet with our CFOs around financial matters and issues around audit. There are those forums.
That's communication for you. Thank you very much. Can you step off NSPN? And we thank you very much and have Sarah with an H. Sarah with an H, because there is Sarah without an H, you know? Yes. Just briefly, Sarah must go all up and look. Sarah is not getting, are they getting claims for Sarah? Oh, dear. Can we then take the last slide, the very last slide? But we'll by 4 to 5 we'll be done if you please. And I'm sure you've seen the trends, just looking at the area that you want us to focus on and looking. There's no holy cow.
Chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, maybe just to indicate the highlights and or areas that we want to indicate to the portfolio committee. The one is the performance of Sarah. It has dropped significantly because from 14.
I think when you talk about Sarah, you must start with their documents. That's why you need to start. Or I thought I would go to the NSEF to check. It's fine. But just to say, their document, this is what their document looks like. Are they happy? Are you happy with this document?
Their presentation.
Their annual report. Yes?
This big document, Chair. Okay. We are here at the department because we had to scrutinize each and every annual report. Yes. And also whether it talks to the mandate of the department. Yes, we had to do that. For Sarah, I think the main concerns for the department is the performance that has dropped significantly. Because in 14-15 they were at 80% performance, and 15-16 at 81%, but last year they were at 68%. So the performance has really dropped because basically they've got challenges with the provincial heritage resources authorities. So hopefully that, you know, Sarah can go back and engage them so that they are well capacitated, they are able to execute their provincial mandate. And the other issue.
Do you know that we don't work on hope? We don't hope that things will happen. You need to tell us
Sarah.
What Sarah?
Sarah was to ensure that they capacitate the provincial resource authorities. I think basically the other issue is that provinces have not come to on board, because there are also provinces that have not even given us their provincial reps. But this is a MINEC issue that we're going to take to MINEC, like Northern Cape and KZN. So if provinces are not represented in the structure of SARA, how are they going to be able to do the work? So that's one of the challenges. So we're going back, and this is the issue that we raised at MINEC last year. We're still going to raise it so that we make sure that SARA is able to execute on its mandates. other issue is the irregular expenditure of 49 million that regarding the Delvonwood project in France. A lot of condemnation was done by the council, but some of the things it's a lot of money, 49 million. And the team, our technical team and the minister went to Delvonwood, and even the chair of the council went there. The memorial that has been put up by ourselves is in shambles. You can actually, I saw the pictures, things are moving, you know, it's not ready for money, and we have to redo the work. So I think the chair will talk to that, because that led to the suspension of the CEO, because investigation is underway. Actually, I understand that, you know, minister was very angry, but I saw the work, it was not good. And then the other issue is the HR issue. SARA cannot afford to provide the annual cost of living at more than 5.6%. And they're at loggerheads with the employees and the union. So due to their budgetary constraints. So it's one issue where SARA was saying they need to then take a unilateral decision and implement this 5.6%. But I think from our side, we need to also just go back to National Treasury and engage them, because most of the departments were, the level 1 to 12, they receive 7%. The 5.6% is for SMSs. For the first time, SMSs receive 5.5. In a long time. But also SARA has had this unqualified report over the 3 years, and it's time that they move to a clean audit. I think from the department those are some of the issues, just a dropping in terms of performance. Thank you, Chair.
Madam Chair, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, this round I did not come alone. I brought some of my council members. Madam Chair, may I introduce them to you? Thank you. I have Dr. Antonia Malan, she's from the Heritage Western Cape. I have Prof. Henry Brenenkamp, he's a council member from the Western Cape as well. I have Mr. Mashlomi Masua, he's from the Free State Province. I have Mrs. Moses Makwe. Mr. Makweyane. He's from the Mpumalanga province. And then Mr. Donald Tatoli is from Limpopo province. And then myself from the Gauteng province. I've also brought, Madam Chair, all the executives from SARA. All of us are here to answer questions and to make the presentation. I want to start by saying that this council took up office last year, August 2016, and that was basically in the middle of the financial year that we are currently discussing. Chair, we were confronted by decisions taken by our predecessors, not all of them good decisions, all of some bad decisions as well, but the decisions. Very early in our term, we were requested by the DIC, the Minister of the DIC, to investigate the irregular expenditure of Dalwood. We've started the process together with National Treasury. We received a report from National Treasury that indicated some points that we need to investigate. Madam Chair, so we have received that report. We've discussed it at Council, and we decided to place the CEO on precautionary suspension so that we can allow the process to go smooth, to go without any interruption or any intervention. Chair, we appointed acting CEO from amongst our executives, and recently we decided to appoint an interim CEO, which is Mr. Thomas Gokolo, that is going to assist us to get SARA back on track again. Chair, as the DGG said, I went to France together with the technical team and the minister, as well as the Minister for Public Works. We investigated the memorial, and I'm ashamed to say that that memorial is really not what it's supposed to be. We paid a lot of money for something that is really not good. We formed a task team together with DIC and DPW in order to see how can we, for the value of money, restore that memorial to the glory that it's supposed to be. It's a very beautiful memorial, it's a very beautiful setting, and you can see that the people that are living around that site are very, they value that site. We need to definitely do something to repair that site like we want it to be. From the report that we received from National Treasury, Madam Chair, there was a recommendation that we should lay criminal charges against those people that are at fault. We have instituted that criminal case. We've opened it with the South African Police Services, and they are investigating simultaneously with our forensic investigation. They are investigating the criminal charges as well. And Chair, this council inherited an organization that is not healthy. Organization that is not perfect, both from an organizational point of view as well as from a financial point of view. The organization is struggling to perform their core functions in terms of the Act, due to a lack of funding, due to resources, and those resources are not just money but also people, the human capital. We have a very high turnover of staff because we cannot pay them market-related salaries. However, Madam Chair, I want to put you and the committee members at ease to say that this council is very committed to address the problems within SARA, to continue to start or to rebuild an organization that can perform the task that was given to us in terms of the National Heritage Resources Act, namely the protection of the heritage of our country. That is why we are here, and that is what we want to do. So there are a few hiccups in the road that we are currently addressing. I'm positive that we will definitely do that in due course. Madam Chair, with regards to the presentation, may I ask permission to request my CFO and my former acting CEO to do the presentation, and then I will assist them to answer the necessary questions. May I ask your permission to for them to present the presentation? Yes, we, Madam Chair, we have identified issues that we will discuss. Definitely not the whole presentation. Thank you.
The presentations that briefly to give the mandate of SARA in terms of what it is that we do in terms of the National Heritage Resources Act number 25 of 1999. And as Chair has indicated, I will move to the next slide, which gives really a brief overview of what it is that our value chain is, and the SARA vision of building a nation united through heritage, and the mission that this council is trying to push to. Our strategic, a summary of our strategic objectives within SARA, and to get to the critical one of the year under review, the predetermined objectives. In this area, that's where we regressed a little bit in terms of the 68% that we had, and this performance is really, as Chair has said, that the Winter Council came in the middle of the year, but at the same time, it's due to the change of the indicators that change mostly from the administrative to the heritage resources management orientated indicators, then that's when, because of the stretch and the capacity of the park, we got a little bit impacted. Just to proceed, this is program one, which really, in this program one, there are eight indicators, and we managed to achieve six of the indicators. We missed on two, which really spoke to the one for the business model and the funding model, and And this is a project that we could not go through with it when the council came, because then it has impact in terms of how the council would have wanted it to be concluded. It is currently underway this year, and it will be finalized, I think, before the end of the third quarter. In terms of program two, which is the Sarampo business, there are 11 indicators here, and of the 11, we did not achieve 4, which really sit solely on the heritage impact assessments. And we have found that most of the work that we do here is most of the work that should be done by the heritage, the provincial heritage resources authorities. And the competencies of some of the PRAS, most of the PRAS, is still in question. Therefore, the work is still being done by SARA. And so that is performance indicator 2.2, 2.3, and 2.4. And you will see it's about 50% achieved. However, I think the committee is interested in knowing then what it is that we are doing. We have looked at streamlining this area of our performance, in that we have, because of the number of capacity of staff, we have increased the number of days within which they can work through the impact assessment report. But also what we have done, we have split the applications that are mainly on the national heritage side that are solely for SARA to deal with. And those then that are done are from the PRAS. We have separated those. So in our reporting next year, you'll be able to see that how many exactly are for the PRAS, and has SARA also not achieved the ones that were solely for SARA. And that reporting will indicate the exact level of our performance. But at the moment, in this current year, the year under review, they were reported collectively, and we didn't achieve them. And the SARA is also mandated in terms of auditing the heritage assets in terms of the collections. Under the year under review, we had 2 projects. However, we managed to conclude one project and not the other, and it's mostly because the processes of acquiring the capacity with our partner institution were delayed quite a bit. By the time we had to report, the project was still underway. And so at 1 March, we managed to report only on one. That project will also conclude during the course of this current year. And this is all on the performance. I will give to the CFO to proceed with the finances.
Afternoon, Chair. Afternoon, committee members. My role is to present the financial report, and I think the DPC already touched on the audit performance for 2017 that we achieved. I'm qualified both on the financial statements and the business objectives. Of course, it is the drive that we like to move in the process, for which I will talk about the presentation. Chair, the financial position runs over 3 slides. However, I'll speak holistically to it to say the H1 date is the financial health. That's how in 2016 and 2017 we moved from yellow, which was concerning, to good. I know it's a bit of an irony given what we discussed earlier on. However, I'll talk to that. What is of note in terms of what regressed in terms of the net asset value is the funding we received from the DAC 2017. not there in 2017, if that weakens the partnership, that's fine. It's not coming. So most of them also make that that call. We do get additional funding that we can address the core of our business.
I don't know. The funding that this comes, this ministry that was there, what was it for? And why was it taken away? So that we don't come here and ask questions and give us all the information.
Okay. Actually, there's a slide that deals with that, but it's more so to speak to it directly now. Is that most of the funding was directed to the roads. So the 25 million that we saw there was allocated to that project. And now given the challenges that emerged in terms of the Eskom process and the non-compliance around it, it was then decided to hold the funding. However, in terms of our APP, that's not the only project that is in implication. So with that being parked around the neighborhoods, yes, it is understood. But there's also other deliverables of the said APP. So it then becomes a very critical position to consider that other targets to the rest of the world. In as far as the financial performance is concerned, you will then also know the impact of the 25 million that we had in the 2016 financial year when we got there in 2017. What also happened, Chair, we need to put into our attention, the general expenditure has increased substantially due to cost containment measures and other things that we tried to do on the basis that we manage very tightly and we only spend on those activities that will enable us to achieve our mandate. The program, Chair, the split is that in terms of program one, we spend 40.7 of the 42.5, giving us 96% spent. And on core business, we have spent 40.4, so that's the 33.9 of the budget, giving us the 92, and then program 3, we spend almost 100% of it in terms of the numbers. Now, this is a slide that we started on in terms of the presentation from the BBG, in that there was a regular expenditure that was prepared, and solely on the neighborhood projects, around the decisions that were made in terms of procurement of services. What do I mean by that? Procurement around that is also reported by the AG that certain contracts above 500,000 were not awarded through the competitive process in terms of the regulations. Other bidders which were given projects, they did not declare their past risk and practices. Others were not invited to bid in terms of the regulations, for example, open for 21 days and so forth. Where it was a construction project, it was not advertised on CIEB. Others just provided the pretext methods which were of concern. However, they still got awarded the project. And so, in as far as the procurement expenditure is concerned, then it was split into the two to say which one was it that was incurred by SARA itself, and then which one was it that was incurred by the project management company. So the one that was dealt with in terms of the SARA staff, it was dealt with and the person responsible was subjected to the disciplinary inquiry, and then it was dealt with in that way. However, now the neighborhood one, it was presented earlier on that it went through the forensic investigation route, given the preliminary report from the National Treasurer to say these are the remedial actions, short-term and long-term. Now, at the moment, we are dealing with the intensified forensic investigation. As we can understand, there's a lot of money that's not going into it. So the chairperson is on in terms of the process and how far we are and what the likelihood of the outcome will be. In as far as taking the committee through, I'll look for that in terms of the time constraint. We have developed a turnaround plan in terms of the SPM challenges that is unacceptable. If you look at our financial performance, take away the regular expenditure, we have a clean audit inside. So then the four slides that follows to then talk to the interventions that are happening on a daily basis, others on a monthly basis, to turn around the SPM and to amplify that we get to that state of view. It is that take out the regular expenditure, then we have achieved the clean audit. So it is inside that we are in that drive. So therefore,
manner in which you do the work. But this thing is going to come back and destroy your integrity as the AG. Because you have a clean an entity obtaining a clean audit. First, there is 45 million that is spent irregularly. What is it saying? You know? Because as I said earlier, once there's irregular expenditure, people out there are going to say they are chowing this money. These people are just chowing this money. And the implications, I think it's important, the AG, what we said when we said, let's focus on the entity. Let us support the entity. Let us ensure that we listen to them. And I think as you were saying, we are sitting here listening, board member, to other entities presenting and the stories that come out of those entities. It's for you to learn how to handle some of the stuff within these entities that you need to communicate. You need to ensure that you take everyone on board, each and every person in any institution wants to be recognized as a human being. I mean, it's the character of a human being to want to be recognized. So I think it's important. That's the first step, communication, where you see that everybody is communicating with each other. The management does not just sit there and just, as Honorable Makan was saying, just call a meeting and say, look, this is what is going to happen. You need to have that communication. And as the council, you need to know what is happening. You are the accounting authority. We're not going to ask the CEO thing. We're going to ask the council because you are the accounting authority. There will come a time where we don't want to see any of the officials, but we want to talk to you as a council. And one day, if we are here, don't say, let me run to Sarah to ask what is happening, or let me call this. We don't want you to call anybody because we want you to have the information in your fingertips. It should be here. What is happening within an entity should be here. Because what other councils are saying, they are saying, but the bureaucrats say that we are interfering with our, you don't interfere. I mean, it's clear. You have your own lane. They have their own lane. You stick in your lane, but you know exactly what is happening. That's why you are there, to oversee what is happening. What is happening is a shame. It's a shame. It's embarrassing. We just don't know what to say anymore as a portfolio committee. Because we've been dealing with this from day one. And as we are about to exit, we are still talking about the same thing that we are talking about in 2014. Honorable members, that's the presentation. Honorable members, don't you plan for oversight?
Chair, I would recommend that we are afforded a pictorial presentation of what NDA is there. Something that we can see and have an appreciation of whatever has been done. And the main question to me was, just for interest sake, was that project built by ourselves from South Africa, or did we get services from there? Now, but the other question that I would like to raise, Chair, is it's more for me to be educated. You know, I've got some deficits when it comes to some of these things. How do we declare what are the procedures followed to arrive at a point where we say the current, the existing properties in the country. Which heritage are they celebrating, for a better way, espousing or whatever? Because when you move around to a few places that I've been to, one gets an impression that the heritage landscape celebrates wildlife more than 80 or 90% of what we have as South African heritage resources, actually a celebration of wildlife. When in actual fact, we should be having a balanced appreciation. Now, the other day, and I'm glad we have that one of the council members here is from Mpumalanga. We were at Middleburg. There's a heritage site. Stradek, yes. Buchabelle. It's a heritage site. No. I mean, if it does some, you can move the area, but it's fine. I'll be corrected. And people are complaining that this site is a privately held site. In other words, it's a private community that is actually working on the thing. On a matter that they perceive to be having a national posture, for lack of a better way. Now, the other question I'd like to raise, Chair, is I read in the papers about 2-3 weeks ago, and I know it's a matter that I've raised before, that the Professor Delius of Rats, it's almost like a complaint that there are heritage resources that are lying alongside the northern KwaZulu-Natal, the Lowveld of Mpumalanga, in the plantations and what have you, which he considers to be of national significance, but they actually are not even protected nor enhanced by anybody. Is that an area that belongs to you or it's outside? You know, like I said, educate me. I have things that I know, there are things that I actually don't know. And that heritage has to do with the stonewalling thing that either has to do with the trade between South Africa and Asia, dating back to the 1300s or whatever else before Christ, I mean, no, after I think he was around and something like that. But the last message I'd like to raise, we went to Makonjwa Mountain, something that they are trying to enlist with UNESCO and what is that. Has it anything to do with yourself? You know, there is a confusion in my mind. I'm unable to reconcile certain things because when we were there, the Department of Tourism appeared to be quite active and central, and I can't remember which another department, but environmental, eh? But when you are very slim, actually there's nothing about you there. Is this part of you or not? You know, just educate me, Chair, and I think perhaps in future I'll have more better contribution to make.
Thank you. I was just checking on the presentation. I just want to understand now that the CEO is on suspension, who's the acting CEO and the position of the acting CEO. But also you must just confirm whether it's true that he was appointed one of the board members, one amongst the board members to act that position, then I can come later.
Thank you, Chair. I just had a look at the irregular expenditure. Now, one of the issues that comes to mind here all has to do with supply chain management issue. I just wanted to find out, well, because the whole supply, was it only the CFO that was suspended or put on precaution suspension because of this irregular expenditure, or were there other staff members involved? And the second question is, I just need to ascertain whether the SARA has a hotline through which people can contact the airport agency to find out to stop a demolition, or if they say this house, the heritage house, they have applied for but it is being vandalized. How do you, is there a hotline that can assist us stopping, or if the municipality decides I'm going to demolish the structure and people there in that town maybe feel this is their site and should be preserved also for the generations to come? What is the hotline? Who do we contact? Who do they contact? And how do you get an entity now to stop this from happening?
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think if you can just respond to Honorable Makondo's question so that he can have his follow up, and then we'll respond to other to the questions from Kali.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We initially appointed an acting CEO from amongst our executives, and then following a strategic session that we recently had at Stellenbosch, we decided to appoint an interim CEO, not from amongst the board members, but from it's a person from our audit and risk committee. So it's an one of our external members that serve on the audit and risk committee. So currently our interim CEO is Mr. Thomas Gokolo, and he has resigned as a member from the IRC committee. I want to start with the question of Member Grootboom with regards to the hotline. We are governed by the National Heritage Resource Act. The Act makes provision for the establishment of SARA, establishment of the Provincial Heritage Resource Authorities for every province, and it also makes provision for municipalities to manage some of the heritage resources. So the Act makes provision for Grade 1, Grade 2, and Grade 3 heritage resources. Grade 1 being SARA, Grade 2 being the Provincial Heritage Council, and then Grade 3 the municipalities. So if there is a demolition that is taking place within a specific province, it is usually that Provincial Heritage Resource Authority's mandate to issue a stop order. The Act makes provision for issuing of stop orders in order for the development and or the demolition to be stopped. Obviously, SARA, not all provinces have active provincial heritage resource authorities, so SARA then, in terms of the Act, need to step into those shoes. It depends on in which province that resource is, Member Grootboom, and if there is an active PRA in, or a PRA in that province, then we can assist. We have currently, we have an active PRA in Gauteng, we have Heritage Western Cape, We do not have an active provincial heritage resource authority in the Eastern Cape or in KwaZulu-Natal. We have, I have contacted the MEC for those provinces in Northern Cape, yes. I have contacted and I've written to the MECs for those provinces in order to inquire when can we expect first a representative of those provinces on SARA, and secondly, what is the situation with the Provincial Heritage Resource Authority. The other questions, now I'm going to delegate. I'm going to ask my executives just to answer the questions that they feel comfortable with. Kumi, can I ask you to do that first, please?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. In terms of the declaration process, what happens is any member of the public first needs to nominate a site that they feel is of significance. It can be a cultural significance, historical significance, and there are various significant scientific and such. So any public member can nominate a site for consideration for declaration. After it has been nominated, what happens is it gets presented to SARA. We have a grading and declarations committee. The committee reviews the nomination for grading in terms of whether it's suited as a grade one site, being then a national site, and then a grade two site with a provincial, and then grade three. If the committee in its deliberations ascertains that it is of a grade two, then that nomination gets deferred to EPRA. If it is agreed that it is of a grade one site, then SARA makes the decision that it is a grade one. It becomes our responsibility to take it through for declaration. The grading first gets presented and it gets approved by our council, and then the public participation also starts as to all the affected parties, whether they agree with the declaration, the proposed grading and declaration, because there are implications in terms of the protections when the site is protected. So the process of declaration flows from the level of which the site is found to be, and it can either be asked for national sites, for provincial sites, then it becomes the provinces. Grade three sites should be assessed at a local level, the municipality. However, the local authorities, they still a challenge that they are also not fairly competent and not established. So currently within our system, it's still very much the provinces and SARA. In terms of which heritage is being celebrated, there's a slide in terms of the declarations that we undertook in the previous year, which is really we are addressing the imbalances of 2.8. The number of liberation heritage route sites that have been declared. You will see there we have gone over 250% over in performance. And this is really to address the imbalance where most of the sites are mostly the buildings. And so the buildings that have been declared during the national monument time. And so you would find that our national inventory will significantly show a skew towards the buildings that have been recognized. However, we are significantly addressing this imbalance. The minister also commissioned the survey for the statues out there, and to understand what is our heritage landscape looking like. And so within a period of 3 to 5 years,
with us proceeding in this manner, in terms of the declarations that are current, we may find that our landscape changes as well. In terms of,
with regards to the Liberation Heritage route, Madam Chair, that is a responsibility of the National Heritage Council. So we are cooperating with them. They identify the sites, and not necessarily just sites in South Africa. It's also international sites that they identify as part of the Liberation Heritage route. And then those sites in South Africa will be submitted to SARA for declaration. So that is a joint process between SARA and the National Heritage Council.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of Botshabelo, currently Botshabelo is a provincial heritage site. And for it to be elevated as a Grade 1 site, any of the people concerned or the community members can do such a nomination to SARA. That would be a process to follow. Yes, we did receive that it is currently under threat, and with the province, we requested that the province intervenes in that regard. We had a meeting that was planned with them, really, that we didn't get to meet as yet. To understand what were the solutions and how can we assist them further. So those meetings still need to happen with regard to Botshabelo. And the identification of other sites, such as the natural sites, the one you mentioned, Honourable Member, sounds like an archaeological site. And so the same process will follow. However, in terms of NARA, the archaeological sites and the natural sites are generally protected, and they are regarded as mostly Grade 1. But the same process of nomination, grading, and declaration would have to follow after that specific individual nominated for declaration. So it's the interest party then communicating those sites of interest to SARA for our attention. With regard to Makondra, we have graded it as a Grade 1 site. We are aware that it's been enlisted for wells status. It is currently for grading, for declaration, as well as a National Heritage Site. The process is that before it is enlisted, it should be recognized by the country as a National Heritage Site. And so for Makondra, within our process, it has been declared as a National Heritage Site. And therefore, the parties can take it forward for well listing. So it will be, it is incorporated as one of the recognized National Heritage Site. And the declaration process can only be done by SARA.
With regards to the National Heritage Sites, the ones that UNESCO is interested in. We have a few of those in South Africa, for instance, the Cradle of Humankind. Although that is a site of national significance, that property is currently managed by the Department of Economic Development as part of the tourism department as well. So that is not really something that is under our control, under SARA's control. That's something that belongs to the DED, and I presume that this one, Komi, will also initially or eventually fall under the Department of Economic Development.
Yes, Chair, it is the case. For every site that is declared, a management authority for the site gets established. SARA works with that management authority to make sure that the management plan for that site is adhered to. And so SARA continues to be engaged in making sure that the conditions of the site are kept, that the significance does not deteriorate. So in its management, SARA continues to be involved as well. Thank you.
Perhaps we will have to intervene, but at least I've been almost assisted with the
And Chair, the person responsible for PRAS at SARA is Mr. Dumisani Sibai. He's there at the back. He will definitely be able to assist. I have one question remaining, and that's the Dalwood one. Can I ask the CS please to answer the questions with regards to the Dalwood Museum?
Thank you, Chair. Members, honourable members. There was a company that was appointed by SARA in 2014-15 and consulting to project manage the construction in Dalwood. So what they've done, they have appointed their own service providers, and that's what was raised by AG in their report, that there was a non-compliance in terms of SEM processes. So they've appointed their own, there were in the past South African service providers that were appointed here, and also international service providers. In terms of the preliminary report, at the moment, it was only the CEO who was placed on the precautionary suspension. However, it will depend on the investigation if there were other members of staff that were also implicated. But thus far, the report pointed out on the CEO at this stage.
Honourable members, I think all questions have been responded to. And as the portfolio committee, our interest, as we have said earlier, is to see that there is consequence management after the report has come out. And the report, we are asking that the report be shared with us as the portfolio committee, so that we are in a position to monitor what happens after the report is released. But as I said earlier, I think what's important is that as you sit and listen from other entities, you begin to learn what is happening in there, and you begin to tell yourself that this is how we need to operate in our own entity, to open the lines of communication, to ensure that people are able to voice, are given a platform to voice out whatever. Because if you don't do that, suppress people will come out and talk anyway while you're trying to suppress things that come out, and to ensure that you do the right thing all the time. I think this is very important. And for the council to ensure that they do the oversight, like we are doing. The oversight we're doing is we're being seen as the accountants of our team. But we want to encourage staff members that do the right thing. And your conscience will be clear. You won't be afraid of anything. You won't be afraid of whistleblowers if you are doing the right thing. So we are appealing you. We are appealing you that you do that. We're so tired of this forensic investigation. We're so tired of dealing with counsel. It's something that I don't think I will ever want to deal with in my life. Because there's always something. But as we are listening to your presentation, we are hopeful that you are one of those institutions that are going to ensure that an integrity that you've got, you bring integrity to this, and you'll
which one?
This is yours, ne?
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
I told you,